Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here for another episode of Beers with Chad. This is a podcast about the stuff I like. So today, because I just got back from Utah, I'm drinking High West Bottled in Bond. This is like a limited edition that I got at the High West Distillery there in Park City, Utah. A place that I made 5, 6, 7 attempts, I think, to go to before I was actually successful. And never going there because it was always closed for an off season or a private event or just closed early that day or whatever it was. So glad that I've finally gotten to eat there at the High West Saloon a couple times, and always fun to pick up, you know, a bottle of the stuff you can't just buy at the store out here in California. So this is like a special, yeah, I'm just going to read it right off the bat. Made in accordance with the Bottled in Bond Act of 1897, one base spirit, single distillery, single distiller, single distilling season, age a minimum of 4 years in a federally bonded warehouse, and bottled at 100 proof. So it's gotta fulfill all those criteria. So very strict, very specific, how a lot of alcohol is in Utah. And yeah, so cheers to you fine folks. Also, if you're liking, if you're liking this glass, this is from one of my favorite companies, Clayton and Croom, out there in Louisville, Kentucky. Probably, I'll get those guys who run that on here sometime. But yeah, so got back from Utah last night, out there for a couple days with the family, and then went to the Lakers game last night, which I had been really excited about for a couple of weeks, knowing I was going to get to see Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, number one draft pick, unicorn of unicorns, alien, and it was a lot of fun. He had a great game. I think 27 points, like 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 5 blocks, 5 steals, which, you know, the 5x5 thing was a very, very rare feat. He's done it 2 games in a row, I believe. Hakeem Olajuwon did it a handful of times. Michael Jordan had done it a couple of times. But Wemby's now the youngest to do it, the only rookie to ever do it, or the last rookie since, you know, 20 years ago or something to do it. And, man, he came out of the gates hot. Dude had like 8 points in the first 3 minutes. 8 points, 2 blocks, 2 steals in the first, like 3 or 4 minutes of the game. I'm like, well, I guess we're about to witness the greatest game in basketball history. Slowed down a little bit, but a lot of fun to watch his vision, his unselfishness. He had a couple of great passes. Unfortunately, he's on the Spurs, so they weren't converting what would have been, like this no-look, kind of not behind the back, but almost wraparound touch pass. The guy missed it, so it didn't become an assist, so they'll sort of just be lost in the wind. But he makes the right play. He obviously is emphasizing making the right play, not just getting his. I'm not a huge, huge basketball fan, but I'm very excited to get to watch his career for however long that goes. Certainly that's got to be the concern with him, because homeboy is very thin. But I know, put on a little bit of muscle since he's come in the league. I don't think he's going to be a guy who, like Giannis, came in at 190 and now is 250. Wemby came in maybe 210. He's probably going to be a guy that ends up playing his best basketball 230, 235. And in some ways that might end up helping him stay healthier, because so many of these really, really tall players have problems with their feet. And if he can stay a little bit lighter, it's going to be less impact, less pressure on his feet. So I hope they're doing all the right stuff and then he can stay healthy and become what it seems like he can be, which is just this incredibly unique, amazing talent. And then, on the other side of the court was LeBron James, dropping 30 points in year 21. Phenomenal. So interested to see post All-Star break if the Lakers can kind of break out and get what they got going in the last year's playoffs going again. Because AD's healthy, he's been playing great. LeBron's healthy, he's been playing great. It just really hasn't been gelling as a team. Some of the details maybe some of the coaching, you know, Frank, they probably would have been better off with Frank Vogel, but you know, who am I to judge that? But a lot of fun getting up there to crypto.com and seeing the Lakers and Spurs play. Also, when I was waiting in line for beers before the game, the group in front of me, group behind me, and another group in line all speaking French. So you can call that the Wemby effect, I suppose. So today I'm going to be talking about sport, the most difficult sport. What is the most difficult sport? So ESPN had a ranking that came out not too long ago, ranking the most, you know, their panel's most difficult sport. And this is through a number of different categories: endurance, strength, power, speed, agility, flexibility, nerve, durability, hand-eye coordination, and analytic aptitude. So I'm gonna give you my take on what they got right, mostly what they got wrong, and give you my own rankings. So today's episode, as all episodes of the Beers with Chad podcast are, is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. So if you're looking to get totally customized, individualized training, the smartest program for you, and just ranked by Sports Illustrated in their best fitness apps of 2024 as the best app for weightlifting, though they were using weightlifting like snatch and clean and jerk instead of, I think what they really meant, weight space lifting, more like strength training. But we were the highest rated app on there in terms of Google Play Store and Apple App Store rankings, kind of by a lot. So if you want to get the smartest program for you and it grows and adapts with you, my brain right in your pocket, you can use code BEERS at juggernautai.app, or don't use the code, but get a 2-week free trial, and you can only do that at the website. So here we go, Beers with Chad, most difficult sport. Cheers.
Welcome to Beers with Chad.
All right, so this past week I saw a post about the most difficult sport. And this was a ranking done by ESPN. And they had a panel of 10 experts, quote unquote, experts, some sports scientists, athletes, writers, maybe more than 10, probably more than 10. And they looked at a number of categories and ranked each sport on a scale of 1 to 10 in those categories, and then took the aggregate of those rankings, and that gave them their most difficult sport. So here is the way that they broke down these categories and kind of what their criteria was. So they looked at endurance, the ability to continue to perform a skill or action for long periods of time. Example, Lance Armstrong. Strength, the ability to produce force. Example, NFL linebackers. Power, the ability to produce strength in the shortest possible time. Example, Barry Bonds. Speed, the ability to move quickly. Example, Marion Jones, Maurice Green. Agility, the ability to change directions quickly. Example, Derek Jeter and Mia Hamm. Flexibility, the ability to stretch the joints across a large range of motion. Example, gymnasts, divers. Nerve, the ability to overcome fear. Example, high board divers, race car drivers, ski jumpers. Durability, the ability to withstand physical punishment over a long period of time. Example, NBA, NHL players. Hand-eye coordination, the ability to react quickly to sensory perception. Example, a hitter reacting to a breaking pitch. Drag racer timing acceleration to the green light. And analytic aptitude, the ability to evaluate and react appropriately to strategic situations. Example, Joe Montana reading a defense. Basketball point guard on a fast break. So here you can see there, I just took the top 25. They had about 50 sports that they did in their ranking. But they have boxing as the number one, followed by ice hockey, football, basketball, wrestling, martial arts, tennis, gymnastics, baseball and softball, and rounding out their top 10 was soccer. I'll put the full list up so you can see, you know, like all 50-ish sports that they ended up ranking. But, yeah, I posted this and had some quick initial thoughts on it on Instagram the other day, but I want to dive deeper into it, how this ranking should really be thought of and approached, and you know, then give you what my rankings are. So looking at what I think some of their biggest misses are, and then how I'm quantifying some of these categories. So I want to stay relatively within the same parameters that they're using, the same categories, but I think contextualize them a little bit better because, well, I think I'm smarter than them. So the first mistake that I think they made is not breaking some of the sports up into subcategories. So you can see like track and field events each got their own category. So it's track and field sprints, track and field distance, track and field weights or throws. They did pole vault as its own thing, high jump as its own thing, and then horizontal jumps as its own thing. Swimming and cycling got sprints and distance. But I think the ranking or the subcategories were a little bit off in some of the cases, like track and field. Sprints and hurdles normally together, vertical jumps, high jump and pole vault, horizontal jumps, long jump and triple jump, and then throws. And then they missed multi-events, decathlon, heptathlon. Football certainly needs a distinction between linemen and skill players, if not linemen, big skill and small skill, but we'll just go linemen and skill players. Rugby could probably use some distinctions as well. Baseball and softball, you could do the same thing with pitchers and position players, or pitchers, infielders, outfielders. So I think they missed some things there. As we go through category by category, this is some of the misses I think they made, and then how I'm looking at these categories before I reveal my rankings. So endurance, in their endurance rankings, how is martial arts, and that's a broad category that certainly needs a subdomain or subcategory to it, but for these purposes, let's assume that they're talking about MMA, encompassing, more or less all martial arts. How is that getting a 5 in endurance, lower than football at 5.38? MMA fight, a championship MMA fight, 5 5-minute rounds, 25 minutes of work. In an entire football game, a player might be running 60 plays that last 5 seconds each, with 20 to 45 second breaks in between. So, that seemed like it was way off. MMA also had endurance, lower than gymnastics, than figure skating. A figure skating routine is lasting several consecutive minutes. Volleyball games, racquetball is a lot more back and forth, a lot more continuous action. Has that back and forth continuous action, but both racquetball and volleyball are having the breaks in it. Figure skating, while it's 2 or 3 minutes of continuous movement, it's just one round of that, or like one round a day of it. Gymnastics, more short, powerful stuff. But certainly not rising to the level of endurance needed for MMA. So as I'm looking at these categories, basically if distance is in the name, if it's a specific test of endurance, like distance cycling, distance swimming, distance running, triathlon, well, they're probably getting a 10. Beyond that, I'm looking at how long are the bouts of activity, and are they continuous, like rugby and soccer, sort of a mix of walk, jog, sprint, walk, jog, run, sprint, or are they more broken up like football with really intense activity for, 4 to 7 seconds and then, true rest in between? Or is it essentially full recovery for an event like throwing, shot put, discus, hammer, javelin, where you're doing this one all-out effort that lasts a second and a half and you might have, 8 to 15 minutes in between the next time you do it. Diving, similarly, just a couple seconds of intense effort with total recovery in between. Next one, I felt like they kind of misunderstood strength and power. So they're talking, about, for strength, the ability to produce force, NFL linebackers. Strength in the absolute force production sense, as it is in powerlifting, is really not that valuable of a skill and doesn't manifest itself very often in many sports, many non-barbell sports, because they move so fast. So while NFL linebackers might be strong to the, regular person, being able to bench and squat a lot compared to the strongest guy at your, 24-hour fitness, they're not strong and capable of producing really high force when compared to true strength athletes like a powerlifter or a strongman. So I think they sort of overvalued strength in some of these categories and undervalued power. But even like boxing, they had a strength score of boxing of 8.13. The maximal strength, maximal force production demands of boxing are very low. You're not dealing with hardly any external resistance outside the weight of the glove. And it's certainly not higher than, you know, a grappling sport like martial arts, MMA, you know, where you're going to have grappling elements. You're going to have all the striking elements of boxing plus the grappling elements. Definitely not more demanding the strength than gymnastics. And there probably should be a distinction made between men's and women's gymnastics. Men's gymnastics, incredible upper body strength required. Women's gymnastics, yes, they're incredibly strong, you know, all around, but a bit more lower body dominant outside of the rings, or sorry, outside of the high parallel bars or uneven bars, my bad. You know, boxing definitely not more of a strength requirement than rugby, which only scored a 7. So again, this was a panel of people assigning 1 to 10 value for each sport in each category. As I looked at this, and I'm going to score them the same way, I'm looking at strength. You know, pretty much if you have a sport with more contact, there's going to be more strength required. And, you know, if the sport is lifting as heavy a weight as possible, which I included some things like strongman and powerlifting that they did not include, you know, then certainly more strength. If the sport is how much weight can you lift, that's going to be more strength. And then the more violent and ballistic the actions in the sport is going to be more power, and the more mass you're having to exert that power against, that's going to be even more of a high power score. Speed. Now, the examples that they gave for speed were Marion Jones and Maurice Green. But somehow, track and field sprinting did not receive 10s across the board. I think it was like 9.88. So I found that to be pretty odd. It seems like that should have been kind of a universal 10. And then they were giving higher scores to some sports that involve no sprinting, like boxing and martial arts. And they're ranking comparable to sports that are heavily influenced by your sprint speed outcome, like rugby. They had pole vault as its own category, field hockey. Those were all lower than boxing and martial arts in speed, sports that don't involve any actual sprinting, even though they defined it as sprinting. And then, you know, track and field, the horizontal jumps only got 6.75 somehow. If you're a great long jumper, you're like 98% as fast as a great 100 meter runner. So some strange decisions there. Now in agility, you know, they talk about agility as the ability to change direction quickly, with Derek Jeter and Mia Hamm being examples there. And, you know, the Derek Jeter one seems a little odd as an example. Like, yeah, he's going to have to react to the ball and take 2 hard steps and then throw it back the other way. But, you know, that's not like a continuous multiple different changes of direction in the same way that some other sports are. But as you're looking with agility, you know, boxing, 6.25 was nearly equal to football. And again, football should probably be divided up into multiple categories, positional categories there. But, you know, boxing, yeah, you're moving side to side, forward and back, but, you know, the footwork is very, very significant in boxing, but there's not true change of direction happening near the same as it is in football. Why was football scored higher at 6.38 than rugby in this ESPN thing? You know, rugby's got just as much, if not more, change of direction in it than football does, you know, because you can be instantly changing from offense to defense. And then some of these sports that basically involve no change of direction, like, you know, distance cycling. How did that get a 3.75? Like, there is no agility in distance cycling. Like, steering the bike, around an obstacle of some sort. I mean, I feel like I'm even stretching there a little bit. So sports like cycling, ski jumping, long jump and triple jump, sprinting, distance running, swimming, rowing, all those have essentially no agility by their own definition. So they should essentially be ones across the board. So I looked at agility as, yes, how well are you changing direction, but also displaying balance, controlling your body in space. Because some of these, like gymnastics, you know, doesn't have agility in the sense that they're using it with the Derek Jeter and Mia Hamm examples, but I would certainly call, you know, Olympic gymnasts very agile athletes. Then nerve, you know, so see how much fear inducement is there in the sport. There were some things that they included, like race car drivers, which I think is, I ended up not including those sports in my rankings. They definitely do some very impressive things, but, you know, like equestrian would be in the same kind of vein, like isn't the horse the athlete there? So I didn't include some of those things. So as I was looking at the nerve rankings, basically thinking like, well, are you going to get hit in this sport? How hard can you get hit? How often are you going to get hit? And do you have a more than negligible chance of dying in this sport? So if, you know, the more chance you have of dying and the more you get hit and harder you get hit, the higher nerve score I was likely to give you. If you have less opportunity and other things, you know, in less contact oriented sports or extreme type of sports that I think still warrants a high nerve score. So if you have less opportunities for all out maximum performance, like my sport background, the shot put, you know, so shot put, discus, hammer, javelin, you probably have 6 throws. That's about 9 seconds total of work. Well, any faltering, you know, a lack of focus for a eighth, you know, a hundredth of a second in that can kind of ruin that attempt. So if you have a very finite amount of efforts to showcase your ability, nerve needs to be a little bit higher. If you're out there by yourself, you know, on the stage, that's going to be a little bit higher nerve score. The more that a small amount of tightness, of stress, of technique disruption translates to a much worse result, that's likely a higher nerve score. So something like golf, you know, yeah, golf's not moving fast, it's not dynamic in the same sense, but anyone who's golfed knows that, like, your grip tightens a little bit, you know, you get a little puckered, and things can really go bad. So, you know, when you're Tiger Woods and you're on the 18th green putting for, you know, the win at the end of 4 very long, very focused days, and, you know, the margin of error is so small to make or miss a putt, you gotta have high nerve. Now, hand-eye coordination. Hand-eye coordination, again, they defined as the ability to react quickly to sensory perception. And with the examples, a hitter reacting to a breaking pitch, drag racer timing, acceleration to the green light. This, I think, is kind of misdefined, and even their examples there are overlapping the hitter reacting to a breaking pitch with analytic aptitude, the next category, which they defined as the ability to evaluate and react appropriately to strategic situations, like reading a defense or running the fast break. Now, hand-eye coordination, which I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here and just define as coordination, because it's not, you know, soccer has more foot-eye coordination than hand-eye coordination. You know, some of the things that kind of jumped out to me is that golf on their rankings was only a 6. That seems like those people have never golfed. Weightlifting, only a 2.25. Those people have certainly never snatched. Figure skating, you're spinning, you know, multiple times in the air and then having to stick the landing on a, you know, a literal razor. Those people ranking that have clearly never triple toe looped. Wrestling, MMA, gymnastics, rugby, those are all just kind of getting disrespected. And to me, that stems from a lack of understanding of coordination, rhythm, and how this relates to technical ability in sports. Also, as I look at this hand-eye coordination, or what I'm just going to call coordination as a stat, it's like thinking of how many techniques does your sport have. So while, you know, my background in shot put, one very intricate technique where you're moving, you know, around in a circle with linear and vertical elements to it, it's just one technique that you're trying to perfect. You know, compare that to, you know, my current favorite sport, golf. You're going to have, you know, all the standard swings, you know, driver swing, like a full iron swing, pitch, chip, putt. But then there's so many other circumstances around that: ball above the feet, below the feet, uphill lie, downhill lie, you know, the wind, you're trying to hit a flop, a punch, you know, hit draws, fades, all these different things, and then the weather conditions around them. So it has a lot of different techniques, but then how fast and dynamic are those techniques happening? You know, when you look at like soccer, let's say, or basketball, there's really thousands of potential techniques because the situation is constantly changing. So, you know, depending on the position of your opponent, you know, the speed that the ball is coming to you, that the opponent's coming to you, how quickly is that space closing, you know, that changing angles, things can change so quickly that you have to be able to coordinate your body, organize your body, and go through, you know, what might be slight variations of other techniques, but make these changes so quickly. That's why it ties in so much to analytic aptitude. Analytic aptitude, they define again as like reading a defense or, you know, running the break. But what needs to be understood with analytic aptitude and how it relates to coordination is the role of vision and the predictive ability that great athletes have. So they use, you know, hitting a baseball as the hand-eye coordination, you know, sort of gold standard. And if you look at the comments in the posts on this, yeah, it's oh, baseball is the hardest, baseball is the hardest, baseball is, hitting a baseball is the hardest thing in all of sports. Hitting a, you know, fastball, a breaking ball, all that stuff, really hard. I'm not a professional baseball player. I can't do that. But people are misunderstanding in that is that it's not just a function of hand-eye, of coordination. It is largely a product of analytic aptitude because the ball is coming so fast that the, you know, keep your eye on the ball idea is actually really flawed. There's a great book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein. I'd highly suggest you read that. And he has a large part in this talking about how, you know, how good baseball players' vision is and basically how they're having to predict where the pitch is going because it's coming at them so fast that by the time the pitch is a foot out of the pitcher's hand, they're making essentially their best prediction, their best very educated guess. And the more times they've seen it, the better they're going to be able to predict it of the pitch is this kind of pitch and it's going to be about here and I'm going to try and put my bat in that area. But it's not seeing it all the way in. It's the eye cannot process the light that it is seeing and send that to the brain and back in the way that it seems like they're trying to define coordination and analytic aptitude here. So you have things that, you know, as we look at analytic aptitude, it's how fast are things happening, how many different scenarios, and then there's, you know, stuff that's happening like in football for a quarterback before the play and then during the play, you know, from reading a defense, but then it's also like the timing of a throw to, are we going to get it over this defender, between those defenders? All that stuff is going to get tied in with analytic aptitude. So as you look at combat and ball sports, generally it's going to be a higher analytic aptitude required versus individual output-based sports, sprinting, weightlifting, you know, where analytic aptitude is very low. There's not much strategy to, you know, a snatch or a clean and jerk. Once you're on the platform, you're just going as hard as you can in this, you know, one technique. yeah, attempt selection and that kind of stuff. But that, you know, this is coming from a powerlifter, from a strongman. There's very, 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 very little, you know, tactical considerations compared to a football player, you know, a basketball player, a soccer player, like in the moment where they're making these decisions over and over and over. You know, just because you have 1 minute to pick your next attempt, you know, and should I go up 5 kilos or 7.5 kilos? Like, not even in the same universe. Last one, I missed durability. So, like, how much are you getting hit? How destructive to the body is performing your event? You know, how high of forces do you have to produce? Do you have to absorb? That's what I looked at in considering durability. Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you are looking to get totally customized, individualized, adaptive powerlifting and strength training for you, the smartest program for you. Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, fully customized, adapts to your feedback, grows as you grow as a lifter, visit juggernautai.app and use code BEERS to save on your monthly subscription. So here we go with my rankings. Boom. All right, MMA on top with a score of 78. All right, and then I have a lot of ties throughout here, and I'm going to break down, you know, the winner of some of these ties with a couple different criteria. The main criteria going to be, do I think that the which person, you know, which people from which sport would be better at the other sport? So like in the tied for second here, would rugby players be better wrestlers, or would wrestlers be better rugby players? So that one I'm given to rugby. I think the rugby players are going to be, you know, the better, or would be generally make better wrestlers than wrestlers would make rugby players. And the big distinction there is going to come from speed. You don't have to be able to sprint well to be a good wrestler, but you have to be able to sprint well to be a good rugby player. So, you know, most things that wrestlers can do, rugby players can do potentially as well, you know, once they learn the technique and everything. And I have a ton of, like, wrestling is so hard, and guys who are great at wrestling are amazing. But that running quality, you know, is going to kind of preclude, and there are some wrestlers that, you know, probably sprint very well. A lot of the grapplers and wrestlers that I've been around don't, you know, to be polite. They don't run very well. They run like a wrestler. So I'd give rugby the tiebreaker there. Then we have a tie between hockey and football skill players. You know, I'd say that football skill players are gonna be a little bit more athletic in the broad sense than hockey players. So I'll put football skill players as ranking above hockey players, you know, to break that tie. Boxing, I've got, you know, ESPN had it at number one. I've got that at number six. It can't compare to MMA, because MMA has everything that boxing has, plus everything that wrestling has, plus everything that jiu-jitsu and judo and all these other things have. You know, that there are just too many constraints around the execution of boxing and the rules for it to rank as high. Now, ESPN had gymnastics much, much lower. They had gymnastics down at number 8, I guess, not much, much lower. And I have gymnastics at number 7. But, you know, some of the ways that they ranked gymnastics, with like the low, relatively low 6.13 in strength, agility, and again, I quantified agility a little bit differently. But, you know, if you're spinning and flipping and twisting through the air, I'm going to call you a very agile athlete. Nerve, I think, you know, 7.5 gymnastics, I put even a little bit higher than that. The hand-eye coordination, again, I'm treating that as just coordination. you know, a gymnast is definitely coordinating their body in space in an incredible way. Super high in flexibility. Then we've got basketball and soccer in a tie. Like the two most popular sports worldwide. If I had to say, you know, on the whole, are there more basketball players, percentage-wise, that are likely to be good soccer players, or more soccer players percentage-wise, like Premier League or World Cup level, that would likely be, you know, successful NBA or, you know, professional European basketball players? I'd have to say that basketball gets the nod there, simply from the standpoint of the body type to be successful in basketball is so unique. You know, there's a lot more variance in great soccer players' bodies, where basketball, you know, so few of those great soccer players, though, even a tall soccer player at 6'2 or 6'3 would be too short, probably, you know, from a statistical likelihood standpoint, to be successful in the NBA. We've got linemen in football. The strength and power rankings bringing them up, the durability part for football linemen, really, really high. I mean, those guys are just abusing their bodies all the time. Lacrosse, tennis, skiing and snowboarding, freestyle. Yeah, this is one I gave a very high nerve ranking to. Like when my brother and I were in Utah last week, and he's really into snowboarding, has been for a long time, like, you know, since the 80s. And I remember we used to play cool boarders. Yeah, I think that was the name of the video game on like PS1. And, you know, you could do a 1440 or all these rotations. And now, like, snowboarders are going beyond what used to be just, you know, sort of a cartoonish video game. So their nerve ranking's got to be so high. Similar, you know, they're like gymnasts on strapped to a board or strapped to skis in the snow with their agility. Yeah, they're not sprinting, so a low score there. They have to be able to exhibit, you know, or exert quite a bit of power to get the air that they are. You know, those freestyle runs are lasting, you know, 90 seconds of sustained effort, but when you're on that last hit of it, like maybe the biggest jump of the whole thing, you have to still be, you know, very, very ready, but, you know, a moderate score for endurance, very, very coordinating their body. In space, you know, the runs are kind of more fixed, even though we call it freestyle. Generally, they have an idea of what they're doing, so they're not making too many decisions on the fly. One that wasn't included in the other rankings is multi-events for track and field. You know, the decathlon and heptathlon Olympic champion are often called, you know, the greatest athlete in the world, the best athlete in the world. I don't know that that's strictly true, because sprinting and hurdles, you know, like, are pretty similar in the grand scheme. Like, is the 100 meter dash and the 400 meters that much different? No, it's a test of speed. Yes, more speed endurance, more top end speed, but, you know, not that dissimilar of skill sets. But multi-event athletes, you know, need to be very high ranking. When I was at the University of California, Berkeley, our head coach had been an Olympic medalist in the decathlon, and he was, you know, he probably could have been a professional baseball player as well, and maybe a professional basketball player too. He was unbelievably athletic, coordinated, strong, explosive. You know, by decathlon standards, the 1500 was by far his worst event, but, you know, by like football player standards, he still would have had great endurance. Water polo is probably a sport that not that many people have a deep understanding of. I've had the opportunity to train a lot of water polo players, really high level guys here in Southern California, as well as you know, being around great water polo players at Cal. And water polo is going to share a lot of elements of basketball, you know, similar endurance profile, strength and power profile, not going to need to be as fast or explosive or agile, but there's all these combative elements to water polo, like, you know, wrestling in the water, that a sport like basketball wouldn't have, or soccer. You know, these great water polo players, like the best water polo player at Cal when I was there, he was like 6'6", 250. You know, these are big athletic guys. Baseball, one that a lot of people in the comments were arguing that this should be number one, it's the hardest thing, but they were basically ranking that only on that hitting a baseball, you know, the quote, hitting a baseball is the hardest thing in sports. That one singular feat is very difficult from a hand, eye, and you know, vision, predictive standpoint. But does baseball require near the endurance or strength, speed, power, agility, as a lot of these other sports? It doesn't. So it's coming in at T15 for me. Of those three sports, water polo, baseball, volleyball, who would I think is probably the most likely to be great at one of the other ones? I'm probably inclined to say volleyball. You know, baseball is going to have a lot of really great athletes in it. I don't know that many of them would be great volleyball players. Outside of the volleyball players, you know, some of them being basically too tall and it being a detriment to them in baseball, those volleyball players are going to be super explosive, really flexible, really able to coordinate themselves and coordinate their body effectively. Would they have the hand-eye coordination and predictive ability to just cross over into baseball? No. Essentially, no one will have that without the time. So it becomes kind of a hypothetical exercise of, well, what if we put this same athlete back in time and they were able to develop that visual acumen to do that? And Michael Jordan is, you know, not a volleyball player, but a good example here. People want to hate on Michael Jordan's baseball career and say that he was this terrible baseball player. He hadn't swung a baseball bat, you know, in a real baseball game since he was in high school. So I think it was about, he got drafted in 84, switched to baseball in, you know, 94, so 10 years, 3 years of college before that. So let's call it 13 years. And he started off his minor league baseball career with like a 13 or 14 game hitting streak. You know, was he getting close to going hitting under 200 at one point? Yes. But even if he had another year, how much, you know, quicker he'd be able to visually understand and predict what was coming. You know, it was really impressive what he was doing. So trying to make, you know, this apples to oranges comparison of a guy who hadn't swung a baseball bat in 14 years versus people who had been doing it every day of their life, he was doing really, really well, much better than any of those minor league baseball players would have done trying to play in the NBA. So I'll give volleyball the boost there. Rock climbing, one that wasn't included in ESPN's rankings. And now rock climbing probably needs several categories for speed and bouldering and free soloing, but you know, I don't think it's quite a big enough sport for that. The only reason I didn't give it a 10 in nerve, because you know, free soloing is not so much the sport that gets competed in for rock climbing as it is, you know, the speed climbing stuff. And they've got a harness on; they're not going to die doing that. But you know, free solo is all the respect for those guys. That's just a different universe. Now let me go category by category here for weightlifting, as I'm sure on the Juggernaut channel, you know, a lot more weightlifting fans. Endurance, really no endurance component to weightlifting, so a 1 there. Strength, I gave it a 9 instead of a 10, just because I have strongman and powerlifting in here as well, getting 10s in strength, and weightlifting does not have as high a strength requirement as those, so I had to give them a little bit less, but it does have a really high power power component. So 10 for power in weightlifting, you know, there with throwers as the most powerful athletes in the world. The speed component, there's no, you know, weightlifters are very explosive. They may be able to run 10, 20 meters very fast, but it's not a part of the sport. They don't have to be able to do that to be successful. Their sprint technique should probably be like non-existent. Agility, you know, they're changing direction up and down very rapidly, and you know, maybe I'm shortchanging them a point there. flexibility. You got to be really flexible to be successful in weightlifting. That's a category where ESPN folks didn't rank weightlifting nearly as high as it should have been. Nerve. You're trying to put 300, 400, 500 pounds over your head in this very rapid movement where you're diving under a snatch or catching 500 pounds on your chest in the clean. Nerve is certainly a part of that, a big part of that. To be a successful weightlifter, you're going to have to be very durable. You're dealing with really heavy weights with really frequent training. Very, very coordinated movement. Granted, it's, obviously three techniques, the snatch, the clean, and the jerk. So it's not as dynamic as a sport with more techniques where they're happening, unpredictably. If you're going out to snatch, it's not like you start pulling on the bar and the judges yell, clean, and then you just have to switch and clean it. You know what you're doing, but a very coordinated movement, certainly. And one in the analytics part of things, because, you got to pick what your next attempt is, but it just doesn't compare to like team or combat sports in that regard. So I actually have weightlifting tied with figure skating. And luckily I had a expert in that field help me out there. And I asked Team JTS weightlifter Janice Okamoto, who you may have chatted with on our customer service before. She was a national level figure skater and a national champion now in Olympic weightlifting. And she said that figure skating is probably a bit tougher just because there's so many more techniques to learn. So we'll give figure skating the nod as a little bit tougher. And I guess she wasn't national champion in figure skating, but she was in weightlifting. So maybe that should be the tiebreaker. Now, the other ones closest to my heart, track and field throws, and no real endurance component. You got to be super strong. You got to be even more powerful than you are strong. Throwers are very fast, but not in the sprinting sense, more in the power sense. If you see a hammer thrower, see a discus thrower, you'll see how agile they are through the ring, dancing bears. The flexibility, if it was javelin only, maybe a 7, if it was shot put only, maybe a 4. So I kind of split the difference there. The nerve rankings, well, no one's hitting you. You're not going to die if you throw it bad, but you do only have, these 3 to 6 chances to put this perfect technique out there. This one singular technique that you've been practicing over and over and over. So, not the highest nerve, but certainly you gotta be mentally tough to perform when the pressure's on. Durability, you're creating and producing so much force, putting that force in the ground against these implements. A hammer only weighs 16 pounds, but as you're on your fourth turn, it's gonna be exerting like 300, 400 pounds of force against you. So it gotta be durable, very coordinated movement, but very low analytics. You're pretty much just trying to throw it as far as you can every time. Then strongman right below that, a little bit of endurance in strongman, but certainly not. And, powerlifters might look at endurance or strongman and think, wow, they have great endurance, but not in the grand scheme. Of course, strength, the most important thing. They got to be powerful. It's not as explosive and powerful as throwing or weightlifting, but it's up there. You don't have to, if you are fast, great, but, I certainly wouldn't call sprinting speed one of the determining factors to strongman, nor would I call agility or flexibility. The flexibility, maybe I'm shortchanging it, a point there because, like a Martin Leitsis, very flexible guy, especially for how big he is. Maybe I'm, again, maybe shorten him a point. You're lifting, 1,000 pounds, putting 400 pounds above your head. That definitely takes a certain nerve and mental toughness to it and a lot of pain that has to be endured. Got to be very durable with an 8 there. The movements are coordinated, but not near the level of coordination of some of these other sports. Like there's a lot of people who are very good strongman competitors who are, I'm sure, wouldn't be very successful in many other sports. And a little bit more analytical abilities needed than weightlifting, just because you're getting a different thing, you know, different events at each contest, but not really the, you know, the main part of strongman. Golf. I probably should bump golf up to a 2 or 3 on endurance. And I say this coming back from Pebble Beach last week and walking 4 rounds of golf in a row, like the endurance, you know, and they don't weigh 300 pounds carrying their big asses around the course like I am. But you know, there is some endurance component there and just being able to stay engaged and mentally focused throughout the entire day. But I only gave him a 1 there. Golf club ain't heavy. You don't need to be very strong. You do need to be a little bit more on the powerful side of things, but even the most powerful golfer isn't really going to compare to the power of some of these other athletes. Don't need to run at all. You do need to be able to move the club fast, but you know, very early point of diminishing returns in traditional measurements of speed and power there. Agility, not really changing direction at all. Flexibility, going to be very important. Nerve, going to be significant. I didn't give it a higher nerve score than this just because it doesn't have the physical element of, you know, someone trying to hit you or run into you while you're swinging. That would be, you know, contact golf could be a different thing. But, you know, standing over a putt, even if you're just betting like $5 with your buddies, that'll get your heart racing a little bit. Durability, you know, Tiger Woods notwithstanding, yeah, it's very repetitive action, but not near the, you know, it's a high volume and repetitive, but just not enough forces at play there. Very, very coordinated and tons of analytic decisions to be made, different shot types, the strategy of each hole. Yeah, so I don't think we should discount that part in golf. And then not in last, but 38th out of 39 here, powerlifting. So no endurance really necessary in a meaningful way here. Very high strength. Don't have to be as powerful as you would in strongman, but you know, it helps. Speed, you don't get any bonus, you know, bonus points, bonus pounds, bonus kilos for moving it faster. You just got to move it. No change of direction. Flexibility, you know, the wider your sumo stance, the bigger your bench arch. Maybe that's a 4, 5, 6 for some people. Nerve, it's going to be there. You know, you only have 3 chances to perform each lift. It's not happening in that faster dynamic of a way. So I kept it a little bit lower, but you're going to put 1,000 pounds on your back. You got to be mentally tough to do that. Durability, going to be a big component. You know, not as demanding as strongman in that regard. That's why I scored it lower than strongman, because the contest just, you know, powerlifting meets just not as hard to get through as a strongman contest. I've done both. The first big strongman contest I did, which was my second show, I felt like I had done 3 powerlifting meets in a day there. You know, it doesn't quite compare from the chaotic nature of strongman that you might, you know, take like a warm-up with a 100-pound empty dumbbell and then the next one you touch is 220 pounds, or you might, you know, walk a 300-pound yoke and then your next one's 1,000 pounds. So, you know, powerlifting is a lot more controlled in that regard. The technique is important, but the technique is fairly simple. And like a lot of these other ones, standing there deciding to, you know, how many kilos to go up, not, you know, the most demanding of analytical decisions. You know, if people started throwing things at you mid-lift and you had to dodge that while deadlifting, we could bump that analytic score up. So these are my thoughts. These are my rankings. Let me know what you think in the comments. If you want to argue with me, if you want to know my rationale behind any of these other ones that I didn't go through, I am very happy to share those with you. This was Beers with Chad. This was Bottle and Bond, special limited edition from High West. Cheers to you, fine folks. Please subscribe, rate, and review.